after 10 years of teaching, what are the potted highlights of teaching cells? So every year I have possibly two classes of year 7 and year 8 people. That's 12 to 14 year olds at maximum, that you have to introduce as their first experience of school, biology at school, is the idea of a cell. And the cell is sort of the basic building block of life, and it's something that they have to know about in general to make sense of a whole lot of other regions of biology. So cell is the building block to go on. This is Peter Hill Explains, while I discuss things scientific. Now this time I've previous podcasts I was stationary. This time I'm beginning to go on a cardiac walk, and you'll probably see me lose breath. This time I'm going up a hill, and what's happening is that I've delivered my son to AFL training. I still can't drive, so he's driving, and he's dropped me here, and I've got a lot of time in my busy schedule of looking after my family to actually do my cardiac rest, and I'm doing lots and lots of podcasts to build up my skill, but also as it's happening, as I automatically process in my brain regions to podcast, it's actually quicker and easier to podcast about it than forgetting it. So I'm sorry if that's a bit insulting for you down in podcast land. So that's the basis of it. So what I'm going to do in this podcast is go through some really basic activities that I've developed or picked up. The very first activity was really from almost the first lesson I observed in the background, and this teacher came in. He was unprepared, and he said, "I'm going to teach you about cells. I always want to buy an egg. I can show you an egg. I can show you all about cells." And he actually forgot to buy an egg, or never intended to buy an egg, and he went on describing how he would have taught this lesson. So that's one thing I always burnt in my mind, is start off with teaching of an egg. So you start you obviously buy a dozen eggs or so, and obviously you check your computer records that none of your children have egg allergies, and you have to manage that. And then, of course, computer records are never perfect, so you must always ask at the start of class without giving too much away. And discuss a little bit about what cells are and get them to guess what's the biggest cell that they've ever seen, / eaten, / fried or poached. Eventually you can get them to guess an egg, and you bring out an egg and you explain, well, that's, you've started off as a single cell, and so as this chicken or dragon or whatever it is, if you want to spice it up for people in year 7, you then say, we have to go through the process of finding out what's in the egg. Now what's happened is there's these cells inside the chicken which have deposited the eggshell. So the idea is an egg shell, a hard shell, developed by birds, in actual fact. I think reptiles have soft eggs, have been developed to the egg that you know, and we have to remove this shell. So there's an activity of carefully removing the shell, and remarkably some people can remove it. Now basically you have to crack the egg. Up the top you've got the air sac, so you'll be able to remove that. And then removing the shell inside is the membrane. So there's an art to actually unsticking the shell from the membrane, so you can practice yourself. But it's picking up a small, I suppose you'd call it ligament, or some connection between the membrane and the shell. You have to actually carefully peel it away. But it is actually possible to actually remove all that. And once you've got that, you've got a standard cell, a membrane with a cytoplasm on the inside. And so you can actually roll that around, have a look at it, and then you can open it up. And inside you see the cytoplasm, and you notice that there's a food store in there because food can't get into the shell. You can't feed the shell afterwards with a blood supply or anything like that, because you'd break the surface there. And something must happen inside. And of course, there's a single nucleus to start off with. There's not multiple cells inside an egg shell. And then there are regions of the cell which are held within membranes, liquid membranes of the yolk. There's also a white section, and in other podcasts I've gone on and looked at the white protein, the albumin. And so most of the egg is food for the chicken to eat, but you've interrupted the chicken's meal and decided to eat it yourself. Because so you've got the yolk and other features. So that's really a good, short, quick lesson which introduces the concept of what a cell is, a much enlarged cell, and how big is a human cell. I think the human cell is the largest cell in the human body. It's hard to imagine that by area. The human egg cell and sperm is the smallest in the body. So you'll have to check that. I just remember reading facts and just have gone in. I haven't pre-thought about it. It's just as I'm talking, it's irrelevant to them to relate to the fact that out comes a chicken, and obviously the cells begin to divide, and you can have a competition if they double every hour. How many hours do you have to go to get to a trillion, which is a million? And I'm off the top of my head, I don't know. So there's a series of activities to do. And so the podcast again is about the, I suppose, highlights of years of standard teaching. So I've really focused now, earlier podcast, on the advanced knowledge that we have had using the 1980s and supercomputers, which have actually unplugged the highly mechanics of the cell. So the cell moves things as if by magic around the place, but now we can see that little nanorobots are doing all this. Obviously, you don't tell them up the front because you get the inquiry mode going. So the inquiry mode is a complex thing, a transdisciplinary approach where you get the spirit of inquiry. That is obviously in direct conflict with the aim of swatting for exams. So if you're swatting for exams, you give them the diagram, give them a few worksheets, and move on to the next bit of exam content. But or you could do the standard take-home clay model, get them to build a clay model and bring it in. There they can faithfully transcribe features they see in two dimensions to three dimensions and attach labels to it. Testing, there is some understanding, but not a great understanding of the functions of the various things, parts of the cell that they generate. And those parts are the nucleus, which holds the DNA, the endoplasmic reticulum, there's the rough one with the ribosomes, the soft one, which have got other functions, the goggly apparatus, which is really not described properly, but vesicles of unfolded proteins go into the goggly apparatus and get folded together and charged up. How it does this is pretty amazing. Mitochondria, the energy cells, just a little bit of an aside, you get different numbers of mitochondria in different amounts of cell. Now, the mitochondria itself, just as an aside, has its own ring bacterial DNA. It has bacterial DNA because it is, in fact, captured DNA, because I've forgotten the name of the cell. The eukaryotic cell, or nucleus cells, is an ancient cell which has, archaic cell, which has actually captured bacteria and keeping bacteria. So it's in an archaic cell which is used to sitting on the insides of hot vents or acid baths. It's actually captured some bacteria which have learnt all shapes of the world, and now they're freeloading on them. Part of the freeloading is that many millions of years ago, one of these cells, the single cells, began to capture bacteria, and we still have the mitochondrial DNA. That's an aside. This is a general talk to teachers, so you can switch off if you don't know that. There's some other smaller features inside a cell, the liposome. You get all these. This is garbage disposal or suicide pills. There's actually stores of digestive juices, and if the cell has to kill itself quickly, it can actually trigger this and actually kill itself. It's pretty amazing property of cells. So we've got all those features here. So far we've just done the egg, and now we've mentioned that you can get people to go away, copy diagrams, or produce three-dimensional clay-do diagrams, often produces nice, and everyone displays it. There's not a lot of testing you can do with it, but there's other things that I like to do complementary to that. And of course, this is leading away from towards the discovery section, as opposed to the rote learning or book replication. And if you're testing for book replication, it's actually best to go in and encourage people to do book replication. So, what you're actually testing for. So, from the eggs, we have another problem of the egg is got a lot of food in it and a chicken comes out of it, but a cell in everyday life is not an egg. How does it feed itself? And so you give them a proposition of getting a plastic bag, a Ziploc bag with water inside it, which represents the cell, it's water, as I've done in another podcast. This is absolutely jam-packed with cytoskeleton, which is making that more like a jelly. More like a jelly that you see inside the egg. But the egg's sort of congealedness is due to the protein-protein bonds rather than the cytoskeleton. So although the innards of a cell is more like a egg innards, the reason that they're similar is for different reasons, and so you give them the problem of how you can eat as a cell, and the general process of taking liquid or having a drink or taking anything is called endocytosis. Endo means taking in. For taking in specific food, solid matter is phytocytosis. I've only read it. I don't think I've ever said it. Students may have mentioned it. but the idea is that you can demonstrate this by having a bag. You put your hand inside the bag. You grab the bit of piece you want to eat. Surround it with a bag, twist it up, and from the inside put a pair of garbage or bag bread ties, they're called, or little ties either side, lock it off either side, cut it off, and you've got a cell with a bit of its surface gone, and a bit of its surface is now surrounding the package of food. So that's solved one problem. And so let's move through what we've done so far. We've got the actual egg. That's an egg, taken it apart. We've gone through and named some of the components without going too much into their detail. There's not real point in going into a detail if we haven't actually got set up some more structures about why everything's there. So if you haven't described what proteins are or you haven't described what DNA is by just mentioning it, it's just very hard. So a brief overview. People like to, at this stage, produce tables. I should mention on tables. This is going off the top of my head. There is this view because many years ago, a group in the HSC exams, the end exam, said we're only going to give award marks to people who have drawn a table by who have drawn a borderline around it. And so in Australian schools, there's a belief that all tables are only tables if everyone has actually constructed a border around the outside. Now, in the real world, in journals, it's the minimum number of lines possible. There's only a thick line between the header and the bottom lines and the actual other lines, which are drawn and implied by white spaces. So there's a difference between your students producing it and a journal, but it should you point out that journal publications go for minimum number of lines. Somehow in Australian schooling we've gone for many multiple lines, and people actually remove marks for not drawing a border around their table. Observe that. You just have to shut up and do if you're in Australia. I don't know what the case is overseas. So at this stage we've had students solve a few problems and think about the cells, and then the next stage is teach them how to produce water bombs. So we have, I think, something in the UK, it's called Cling Wrap. Glad Wrap is the Australian bag. This is a I've forgotten the name. It's a film that you put over bowls. It's a stretchy film. You put over salads and stuff like that, and you can store things in it. Essentially, this is an example of an electrostatic force. The cling is due to electrostatics as you pull the cling away. You get electrostatic forces and create a negative and positive surface. That explains the cling wrap. So it's a thin plastic film for packing sandwiches in. You get a roll of that and you show the students essentially how to make a water bomb, because one of the things you want to do is get as realistic a cell as possible. And of course, making it out of clay in bits is a realistic three-dimensional clay model of a clay. It's realistic because it's a model of a clay diagram. And that's another important point to actually try and explain what models are. There are abstract models or conceptual models, they're mathematical models, and then there's physical models. This is a physical model, and it's to aid, in this case, communication, not to necessarily replicate function in certain ways. It's to give a one-to-one correspondence that you can actually label. So we're going to make a model. In this model, we're trying to make it a bit more realistic. So you use your cling wrap, hold it in your left hand with your thumb, push down so there's a gap there, a well. You fill that with water. You peel off the water so it's a nice bubble, and you rotate, and so the bubble is closed off. If you were to burst, it would squirt water everywhere, and you've got a bubble to remove. So you've got a sphere with a like a wick coming off it of twisted cling film, and the cling film will actually get larger because it's a larger surface area as you get away, but getting towards it will be actually quite a narrow part of cling film due to stretchiness. It's important not to get too much water directly in there and nowhere else. So when it's squashed together, then you take this over a candle and move it back and forth so it's just begins to heat up enough. Got to watch about smoke and toxic inhalation, but if you hold it sufficiently high above the candle, it doesn't burn, it only gets a bit soft. It takes a bit of patience for it to thin out a bit. Once it's thinned out a bit, that's all you want to do. You want to thinned it out a little bit, and once it's thinned out about you can continue to turn and pull it apart, and what you'll have in your hand is a little sphere of water, and with that sphere of water you will have basically a cell. And people say, oh, that's a cell, but doesn't have things inside it. And so you have material, beads, bits of plastic, and other things which they can start to... and straw that they can construct, and string that they can construct their model of a cell. And so rather than specifying what's what, they can make a selection, and then they have to do a clear... labelled diagram of their cell, and use a second bead to so you can do that, have it on a board to actually have a series of things, and you can get a piece of cling film, I don't want to give too much away, and mark that with texture to get to your spots in the inner reticulum. You can get bits of little strips of plastic, long beads to indicate your mitochondria, other shapes of plastic, or even Play-Doh. Well, if I can just make a recommendation, if you're ever mixing liquid and water, and any sort of thing moldable together, it's the coloured, we call it blue tack. Sticky tack is the stuff that you use behind walls to actually stick up posters. That's sort of the ideal moulding material to place in. It sort of has got two uses. You can actually mould quite a realistic goggly apparatus of the colour. You can buy multicolour blue tack. Tacky, oh, I've forgotten what it's called. It's a 3M product, I'm sure. All sticky things are 3M products. And the other advantage is because it's sticky, you can actually stick to your little poster. So you've got a 3D poster of there. And I suppose you get the issue of, this is okay, but the actual organelles, these are the components, the nucleus, the goggly apparatus, the mitochondria, don't move around inside your cell and norm. So this is a way that people can start to infer the origin of microtubules or the other things which support the cytoskeleton. So this is an overall... I'm not exhausted because I'm on top of the hill. I'm just walking back and forth, so if I went up and down the hill, you'd hear me just gasping for breath at this point in time. I'm pretty good. I'm about 6 weeks out from the operation, so it's going to be hard rehabilitation after this. So let's review in this podcast. The end of this podcast is just basically to quickly data dump the underlying information how to teach cells. What often happens is that there's this interesting stuff which school science hasn't reached and you want to talk about, and remarkably even experts in the field out here in Australia haven't heard of, say, the little nanobots which are all operating objects around inside the the cell. This is the Kaizen, little robots which actually walk up and down the tubules. There's many questions or many things that I think are probably likely. We haven't discovered that, but I can't see... I still think there's things to... For us to understand about filaments, we still haven't seen. This is the way that RNA can just zip off to the ribosome. This is, you've heard it first from here, but it's my hunch, just looking at it, that the ability for the components to come out of the nucleus. We already know that there's microfilaments within the nucleus to organise the RNA, messenger RNA. Is that right? Messenger RNA out of the nucleus to the nuclear pores. We already know that's there. So I think they probably extend further in a more complex way through the cell. That's just my hunch. These things are coming out now. What I've got to say is that it is worth investing a little bit more to get your students a bit more curious at problem solving. If you're not in a supportive environment, I don't know, give up. It's hard to say. I've got sort of a natural curious curious bent, and I suppose give the basic students understanding. It's just that then when you give them all this basic inquiry-led understanding, when they see animation like the inner life of cells, or they see the, I think they're up to 10 photon, that is 10 infrared photons come together to illuminate a fluorescent molecule on the microtubules and the centroids in the mitosis. You can actually see mitosis live, and it's a pretty amazing thing to go. And you can actually, they can actually genetically mark all of these individual parts of the cell with different colours. So the actual cell itself is being turned into a living model. That's something hard to get your mind about. We've actually engineered life itself to be a model. It's a pretty amazing thing to see. But the point that I'm making is that this additional effort to raise your students to the next level means that when they see these animations and stuff like that, they have a structure to go ahead. And it's actually really important, because these students grow up watching Harry Potter, watching Wingardium Leviosa, I can't remember what Hermione always says as she lifts up the feather. They see a whole lot of cartoons where things just in CGI magically move across. It's all by magic. So and you ask them and they just say it just does. They don't have that inquiry mechanism which says, oh, why does this vesicle move from this point to here, further down here? Of course, you won't get a year 7 or year 8 student asking that. Oh, there are, I must admit, there's been about 3 or 4 really bright students who have locked on, followed along. But these are poor lost souls in the overall education system. This is bringing my cardiac walk to an end. I've actually got to do some serious walking now. But this is Peter Hill Explains. In the meantime, keep on doing science, and thanks for listening.